This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Colostrum LD from Sovereign Laboratories. Colostrum LD is clinically proven to maintain optimal immune function, eliminate harmful pathogens, and fight infection, as well as cleanse and prevent the absorption of toxins. Adding Colostrum LD daily to your diet provides the essential nutrition needed to maintain optimal health. To order, just go to sovereignlaboratories.com. That's sovereignlaboratories.com. If you're a first-time customer, you can get a full 5-day supply for free. Just go to sovereignlaboratories.com for Colostrum LD. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're well on our way towards normalcy as the summer is receding in the rearview mirror, and we're back sort of on track. It's a little discombobulating as we begin.
What do you mean normalcy?
Normalcy. Oh, normalcy is lying on the beach with a good novel. Right.
Okay. Yes. Yes, please.
Yeah, over the vacation I caught up on Breaking Bad episodes. I missed the whole Breaking Bad phenomenon, so now I'm trying to catch up.
Oh, it's so good.
It's amazing, yeah. And an interesting reflection on, with a medical perspective, on the transformation that occurs when people get a very dire diagnosis.
Mm.
So I recommend it. So in the news this week, before we get to questions, by the way, our theme, we answer questions. You can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Those of you not familiar with the format, we answer questions, all and sundry, related to medicine and nutrition. And I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. With me is Layla Mudin, who's our nutritionist in residence. And we sort of tag team on questions that you send us. Before we get to questions, I just want to comment on something that, I just love to be vindicated. And this is something I've been saying for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole notion that people should take an aspirin to prevent all manner of calamity, particularly
like a headache.
headaches. Yeah, okay, one thing. But the aspirin to prevent heart attacks.
Yeah.
Now this is actually an interesting thing because it represents sort of a marketing shift. Aspirin used to be used a lot prior to the advent of other painkillers and fever reducers.
Yeah.
And so, when kids were sick, they would give them an aspirin. So-called baby aspirin. There was actually a time where there was something called baby aspirin, which was low-dose aspirin.
Tasted great.
It's an oxymoron because baby aspirin can be deadly. It can cause something called RIES syndrome.
Yes.
R-E-Y-E-S. So immediately this major marketing outlet for aspirin was obliterated because not only was it not beneficial, but it was quite dangerous. So what do you do with all that low-dose baby aspirin? Well, you market it to old geezers or middle-aged people who are desirous of prevention of a heart attack.
And old aspirin, not baby aspirin.
Right, yeah, it's like elder aspirin.
Elder aspirin.
Yeah,
old aspirin. Yeah.
Middle-aged white male aspirin for anyone over the age of, pick an age, 50, 45, 40.
Yeah.
Everyone should take it because, God forbid, you might have a heart attack and or it reduces inflammation, all these good things.
Mm-hmm.
So they finally did a big trial on this. Actually, some previous trials have suggested this. ABC News reports this headline, "Aspirin disappoints for avoiding first heart attack stroke." And now, let's not get confused because aspirin has a use in people who've had a heart attack or people who've had a stroke. Who do not need other types of more serious heavy-duty blood thinners, aspirin can be beneficial. That's what's called secondary prevention. But for primary prevention, it struck out in this huge study, comprising thousands and thousands of individuals.
Not good for primary prevention.
12,546 people. And even though they were thought to actually have a moderate risk of suffering a heart attack or stroke, so these are not healthy people. So I've always told healthy people, people say, well, I'm a certain age, should I take aspirin? I go, no, don't take aspirin.
Yeah.
Now, these are even people with somewhat high risk for cardiovascular disease. Perhaps they've had a risk factor, for a high cholesterol family history, who knows, hypertension. Boston-led study gave aspirin or dummy pills to 12,546 people who were thought to have moderate risk of suffering a heart attack after 5 years. 4% of each group, no difference, had suffered a heart problem. Benefits were negligible. And oh, by the way, 1% of aspirin takers had stomach or intestinal bleeding. That's twice as many on dummy pills. So the downside was greater than the upside. The upside was negligible. Mm-hmm. And, so another one of these verities, you know, all these verities, like, you know, avoid cholesterol, avoid saturated fat, avoid salt,
Just stop living.
But take aspirin.
Take aspirin.
Yeah.
And especially, this is my favorite, right. My favorite pet peeve is take it at night. When mm-hmm. should I take my aspirin, doctor? Take it at night.
Right.
Meaning on an empty stomach.
Oh, probably not a
meaning
great idea.
More prone to get an ulcer or GI bleed.
And then you lie
down.
Prone and it doesn't even go down for the gravity effect.
Right.
And it might cause esophageal irritation. Mm-hmm. So the other thing is that I remember, and this is about 10, 15 years ago, some English guy, a professor of cardiology, came up with the idea of a poly pill that he was recommending that everyone take. And he said it should consist of aspirin. Mm-hmm. It should consist of low-dose blood pressure medication, a statin.
I remember this.
Yeah, the poly pill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I remember
this. And then everybody should take this. And you didn't even have to do any screening to decide if people need it. It's like whatever misfortune you might encounter, it's going to prevent.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, maybe put a little Viagra in there, maybe a little Zoloft. You know, just in case you have erectile dysfunction.
Lithium.
Or, you know, like a little antidepressant, maybe a little Valium, you know, something, you know, just, a lot of people anxious. Uh-huh. Maybe, you know, so, you know, it could really cover a lot of bases with
Should we follow that with a tequila or chaser or something?
Okay. Well, now we know that no amount of alcohol is beneficial. So the
zero
prohibition is coming back. Accordingly, that's another story.
That's a whole other story. Right. That's true. I brought up tequila because of our last patient. We were discussing that a bit.
She said she asked how many tequila shots she should have.
Yes. No.
While she's on.
No, we talked about the different alcohol that would be.
Okay. So anyway, so you know, I just wrote an op-ed or you know a blog part which appears in our newsletter about. It was just talking about the irresponsibility of health journalists and also to some extent of scientists who gin up these studies. Mm-hmm. That tell us that this or that or the other food is you know life sustaining or is poison, mm-hmm. and it just is a disservice.
It really is, and you know we're left holding the bag to either pluck any pearls if there are any present, or you know debunk all of it. And mm-hmm. it winds up that we're debunking most of late. I would say 80-85% of what we're reading. So it's really disheartening.
I'm going to try to go for a month without debunking because it's getting a little tedious. It's like I feel like
I'm putting out fires.
Like I'm swatting flies in the middle of you know like the Amazon or something. It's a no-win proposition.
Right.
And what it boils down to is fake health news that is a disservice to people. But anyway, let's see if we can get some truthful news out to people.
Yes. That was a really good article. I'm really glad you addressed that, and especially this day and age with everything that's happening. So it's
good.
It's timely. It's
check it out at drhoffman.com if you don't subscribe yet to our newsletter. What's our first question, please?
We have an email from Jim. Thanks to you and Layla. Your podcast with Dr. Kaufman taught us some valuable lessons, but here's my dilemma. Dr. Kaufman of LPR?
Oh, okay.
Of Laryngeal.
I'm sometimes referred to as Dr. Kaufman.
Your podcast with Dr. Kaufman.
Okay, right.
Dr. Kaufman preaches the virtue of an alkaline diet being of immense importance for people with reflux, which also poses or masquerades as asthma or post-nasal drip, all related, she says, to reflux or laryngopharyngeal reflux, LPR. Jim says, I have all three, especially a lot of mucus in my throat.
Okay.
But eating more alkaline poses a problem. I eat a low-carb diet, which includes a lot of acidic foods. Meat, chicken, fish, eggs, hard cheeses, most fruits, many nuts.
That's where I have a problem, is he's under a misimpression.
Yes.
Right?
That meat is acidic in the sense of acid forming. Yeah. Exactly.
So,
yeah.
You've looked at this issue. What
exactly,
would you say?
Exactly. Jim, not all the foods that you're saying that are acidic is not meaning to be, these are still foods of low acid, meat, chicken, and fish.
They're
for
pH
example.
Neutral, but they're yeah. potential to generate acidity in the body
yes.
upon metabolism and digestion and processing
yes.
is different than their effect. So here's an example.
Right.
A food that is acidic is
lemon.
A lemon. Mm-hmm. It has an acid, you know, if you put lemon on your burning esophagus, you're going to get some burning. However, it's a very alkaline food.
In the body.
Exactly. As most fruits are. Fruits and vegetables
right.
tend to be alkaline. Although there's some examples which are initially on...
That's true. You don't want to have strawberries, raspberries may be problematic for people, raw peaches, there are foods like cucumbers, tomatoes, raw broccoli, raw onion, garlic. Hmm. These can be problematic for people who need to be eating less acidic
right,
foods
right.
for the reflux.
The second thing
yeah.
I would point out is that meat-based diets have the reputation of being very acidic or acid-forming in the body.
Yeah.
And they're net, to some degree, acid-forming.
Yeah.
But the biggest contribution to acid formation is processed grains
yes.
and sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And
followed
also,
by dairy products.
And also deliberately cola beverages.
Oh yeah.
Which are a combination of sugar and phosphoric acid.
Mm-hmm.
Because
terrible for the bones.
Yeah.
If you want kidney stones, drink more soda, cola
mm-hmm.
in particular.
They will acidify
yeah.
you in a yeah.
Jim particularly has a lot of mucus in his throat. But Jim is also eating cheese.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, the first order of business on your low-carb diet, which is fine, just be, you know, privy to the list of foods on the LPR diet. And the book is called Dropping Acid.
Mm-hmm.
It's on my bookshelf by Dr. Kaufman. What you want to do is eliminate all dairy in your diet because dairy is a mucus maker,
mm-hmm.
no matter what. You don't have to be allergic to it for it to form a lot of mucus or phlegm. In your body, in your throat, in your nasal passages, all of that. So eliminating that would only be helpful.
And I think, you know, LPR sort of brings into focus the connectiveness between the sinuses and the palate
mm-hmm.
and the throat and the esophagus and the stomach, where there are many forces that come together there to create irritation and mucus production
yeah.
and inflammation and sometimes pain.
Right.
Sometimes without pain, it's often referred to as silent reflux, where people just experience hoarseness
yes.
or a sense,
yes.
a sensation they need to cough or clear their throat.
Clear
a
their
lot of
throat
people,
chronically.
you know, this thing
yeah.
It is characteristic of LPR, which is only a recently recognized thing, responds very badly to acid-blocking medication.
Oh, good. That's
yeah.
a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
Because now we have more SIBO.
Yeah.
Because of acid-blocking medication.
Right, it disrupts the lower intestine. So
yeah.
the, you know, the innovation that Dr. Kaufman brings to the fore is identifying this condition, but also proposing a different solution that's a dietary and more natural solution than taking acid blockers.
Yeah. The usual suspects besides chocolate, teas, coffees, the vegetables I mentioned earlier, you also want to avoid any citrus as well, like
mm-hmm.
the lemon you mentioned,
right.
can be very acidic, very hard on the esophagus or even the stomach, but more alkaline forming in the body. So, Jim, you can follow your low-carb diet. Just follow the list of foods to avoid on Dropping Acid,
mm-hmm.
and you could still keep your blood sugar
so
levels
just mentioned that
down.
Another benefit of the low-carb diet is that it reduces fermentation in the gastrointestinal
yeah.
tract, which is a major cause of sort of upchucking, is the gas
yes.
ascending through your maybe the origin is your stomach or the origin's in your small intestine, and then it goes up
yeah.
And refluxes up, and then it also sometimes mixes with undigested food, and then you get sort of a acid splash in the esophagus or in the
right.
back of your throat. So Dr. Atkins noted, I think he wrote a paper on this once, about how many of the patients they put on the low-carb diet for metabolic purposes, for type 2 diabetes or prediabetes or simply weight loss, reported improvements in their GERD symptoms.
Yes, they didn't have reflux anymore. Yeah. Until that one day that they finally cheat, like with a sandwich.
Okay.
The bread, I would right. blame, unless...
Did you say there was sandwich?
Sandwich.
A sandwich.
A sandwich.
Okay.
That the reflux would just come roaring back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a clue. And it's the grains, yes. It's also the gluten as well. That's problematic there. So, Jim, follow your low-carb diet. Get rid of all that dairy. See what happens to all that mucus in your throat.
Okay.
If that can all be broken up.
Don't worry about the acid.
Don't worry about the acid. Precisely.
Okay, Layla, at this point, let's pause to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with you. So here goes.
Did you know the benefits of nature's most powerful superfood are universal and always available no matter what your age? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a nutritional supplement I recommend and use that's clinically proven to maintain optimal immune function, eliminate harmful pathogens and fight infection, and cleanse and prevent the absorption of toxins. It's Colostrum LD from Sovereign Laboratories. Adding Colostrum LD daily to your diet provides the essential nutrition needed to maintain optimal health. With Sovereign's proprietary enhanced delivery system, Colostrum LD is the most effective colostrum available. Colostrum LD has wide-ranging health benefits at every stage of life. To order, just go to SovereignLaboratories.com. That's SovereignLaboratories.com. If you're a first-time customer, you can get a full 5-day supply for free. Just go to SovereignLaboratories.com for Colostrum LD.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our Q&A with Layla. Layla, what's our next question, please?
We have a question from Bernice. Do you know anything about replacing the fat pad on the bottom of the foot? I was told mine is almost down to the bone.
Yeah.
Over the years, I've had issues regarding my feet. I know what she's talking about. Yeah. I've had these same issues.
Well, you know, to some extent, it's more of a problem for women because they wear high heels and they put more pressure on the fat pad. And it's kind of
It's not just about the heels, and I rarely anymore, but even so.
Well, it's an age-related thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a runner, I kind of notice that...
It's like pounding the chicken cutlet.
Yeah, I can't tolerate that much mileage.
Yeah.
And, you know, they came out with these ultra-thin shoes for a while. It was all the vogue. It was like a thought to be better for your feet. Like very thin soles. And it was like barefoot running, that whole idea.
Oh, right, right.
It's supposed to replicate barefoot run. Of course, you can't barefoot run through New York City because you get broken glass and, you know, like...
Infection.
Hepatitis.
Exactly. You know,
right? So you want to wear these like really thin. But the problem is they hurt my feet. So I said, I guess I've reached a point where I need more padding. And then there are these shoes that are these ultra thick shoes now that they're no good either because... They tend to make you so oblivious of the pavement that you get injuries. You step wrong and you get injuries more in your knees and your ankles and your hips and your lower back because you just don't have the proprioception. Instead of going ouch, you absorb the shock in other parts of your body. So,
interesting.
But what does happen is there is a little bit of atrophy of these fat pads in your feet that is age related. So, you know, I thought, what do you do for that? Well, you can get pads to put in your shoes, they don't help that much.
Right.
It's not like your natural fat within your foot. And then there are a series of operations where they can actually inject, some of your own fat or some filler material into that that helps some people. But it's a little bit of a drastic step. I'm not sure how that pans out. If we have any podiatrists in the audience who want to weigh in with some comment on that, we'd be happy to pass it along to people.
I want to tell Bernice, wear slippers at home. Sometimes it can be hard walking around your hardwood floors. But she's asking, I've heard of drinking bone broth because of the hyaluronic acid.
Yeah.
It's good for your joints. It's not going to create a fat pad.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Other than gaining a whole lot of weight where that fat might redistribute itself, but by the time it gets to the bottom of your feet,
I think that's counterproductive
that's
because
idea.
The weight's going to put more pressure on your feet.
And, exactly.
So you can't. It's like saying I'm going to take whey protein and build my muscles. Well, you can't tell the whey protein where to go. You can't tell the fat where to go.
Exactly. Yeah. But wear well cushioned shoes. Back when I was a runner, I loved Etonic sneakers. Do you remember the brand Etonic?
Yeah.
I was walking on clouds.
Yeah.
And it was
what,
great.
What I'm liking these days, I mean, for those of you
and
who
And they didn't wear
runners,
down so quickly.
Yeah. I have, you know, very wide feet, so I have to get wides, and so it limits my choices. Mm-hmm. But the Brooks Glycerin has lately been my choice. And I'm very happy with them. I mean, I'm just,
great.
It's heavenly to run in them. Yeah, usually I use a New Balance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't find the Nikes very good because the Nikes that I've used are more showy and more for style.
Yeah.
Although some of the athletes use very high-end Nikes that mm-hmm. I think they cost like, you know, over $400.
I was not able to wear Nikes either. I have a wide foot and they were always too slim.
Yeah. They don't make a lot of wides. They yeah. do in certain styles, but they're more just really pretty street shoes, but they for yeah. running purposes, they're not that utilitarian.
Yeah.
And Adidas also offers some wide styles, but more mm-hmm. limited these days.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bernice, thank you for your question. Take good care of your feet.
And just a point to be made is that, you know, you don't have to be a runner to get like a running shoes. Running shoes are really designed to be very comfortable under conditions where there's a lot of impact.
That's true.
So, you know, it's funny. You go down to Fort Lauderdale where there are a lot of senior citizens and they're all dressed like the track stars of yore. You know, they have like track suits on and they have the most, they like brand new, uh-huh. you know, gleaming
right.
neon colored sneakers.
Yeah.
And that's for foot comfort.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, style be damned.
Right, right. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Oh, we've got an email from Bruce. Dr. Hoffman, my name is Bruce. Love your podcasts. My question is about caffeine. I drink iced tea from morning till I go to bed at night. Does all that caffeine affect my blood pressure? I'm thinking about switching to decaf.
Well, so the latest is mm-hmm. that if you tolerate it...
Yeah.
You know, the way I look at these studies is like, the studies show that if you drink 4 cups of coffee or more, your heart will be in better shape. Well, my answer to that is like, if 4 cups of coffee or more a day doesn't kill you, your heart's probably in better shape.
That's you know, right. That's
if
true.
You don't get like, but actually some studies have suggested that a high consumption of caffeine is not associated with atrial fibrillation. In fact, it may,
yeah.
all that, something about, probably not the caffeine, but the polyphenols in the coffee, may protect the electrical system of the heart from deterioration.
Yeah. But what about blood pressure? Caffeine still
yeah.
constricts.
It's a presser.
Yeah.
So
just temporarily it may raise
I think it's
it.
A little bit like salt. I think, you know, some people are sensitive to salt,
yeah.
sensitive hypertensive. I think they're caffeine sensitive hypertensives.
That's true.
I think you have to see.
Bruce, get a blood pressure cuff.
Yeah.
Like an Omron or
yeah.
something. And check it out
but,
after your glass of iced tea.
But by the way,
tea.
You know, statistically, the recent studies are sort of, you know, overturning this. It's again a little bit like the aspirin a day thing. It's like coffee's bad for you. Avoid coffee, you know. And now studies show that coffee has benefits.
Yeah.
Unless you are someone where it makes you anxious or you can't sleep.
You're a slow metabolizer. Or
that's
caffeine.
Part of it too, is that yeah. some people are very slow metabolizers. It sticks around. The caffeine sticks around, and they have a more profound effect. Other people can burn through it. And actually, 23andMe can tell you if you're a fast or slow metabolizer of caffeine. That's one of the
yeah.
The
direct to consumer.
Yeah,
genetic
that's
tests.
one of the reports has to do with your mm-hmm. caffeine metabolism. Okay, good point at which to pause because,
yeah.
as our regular listeners know, we divide these podcasts into two. Bite-sized parts,
mm-hmm.
and so now you can A, go to the bathroom, B, you know, tend to that, food item that's cooking on your stove, you know, turn down the flame.
Right.
Or, you know, simply take a break and then come back to part two wherein we will discuss.
Oh, is there another cure for leg cramps? Stay tuned to part two.
Yet another cure mm-hmm. for
leg cramps.
The bane. Of humanity, which is leg cramps.
Apparently,
it's yeah. a big problem. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is our weekly Q&A with Layla, part of our Intelligent Medicine series. We'll be right back.